You are listening to Grandpa Lampshade on RadioArian.com.
That's right, it's Tuesday, and you know what that means. That's right, installment number 11, Church of the Lampshade. Grandpa Lampshade here with you yet once again, and it is great to sit down and visit with you. I hope this past week has been great for all of y'all, or at least bearable. Sometimes I just settle for bearable, to be honest. We take what we can get. There's up days, there's down days. It's that way for everybody, folks. We're all in the same boat. Either way, though, I'm glad that you found your way here. I'm glad that you're able to stop by for this week's visit. Always good to know that you're here. As always, I want to shout out a thank you for the six of you who have sent support this past week. It is very much appreciated. You know, when all of this first started, there was an outpour because it was all over and everything, and it was all in the news, and it was all the buzz. And now we're back to those views of such familiar faces and familiar names that, you know, that have been with me a long time here in this work here in Radio Area, and I really appreciate y'all's continued support, and I really do mean that. If you do want to be a part of supporting what we're trying to do here moving forward, you can do that. All the information is at the bottom of the description. PO Box 6621, Granbury, Texas 76049. We've got Bitcoin, and of course you can always email me about questions, comments, just say hello, whatever. Grandpa Lampshade 1, don't forget the 1, at gmail.com. So yeah, as we come together again, I hope this time finds you all doing well. As always, as the weeks are up and down, as I said, and I was thinking earlier in the week. In fact, I put this up on Gab. I said, you know, doing the things that we do and the sort of stuff that people like you and I do. I said, this is like it in a nutshell. It's like us, you know, hey, dude, your home's on fire. And the homeowner's reaction is to point and scream arsonist at us. Arsonist, you're burning it down. Meanwhile, you're like, no, your buddy there standing next to you's got like a lighter in one hand and an empty can of gas in the other. No, it's not him. He's my friend. It's you. Because I never noticed smoke coming out the window until you started pointing it out. Who else would know there's smoke coming out? But you're the one that must have set my house on fire. That's what it's really like, you know, as we go around and try to point to the truth and the truths against the lies of this world. And it just seems like, you know, forget appreciation. It's we're at the opposite end so often as people point and accuse us of being the ones that are tearing down things and tearing down the status quo, tearing down the societies that we live in. And we are merely the ones pointing out that this is happening. As I look at things, you know, I was reflecting the other day that, you know, a couple or 3 years ago, yeah, maybe, you know, maybe we could have taken a different path. I think it's pretty much too late for our nation. It, as far as, you know, it just, the road is, the conflict has already started. It hasn't touched everybody yet, hasn't even touched most people yet. But the conflict is already in motion, and now we just kind of ride it out and see how all of this plays out. But yeah, the time of conflict has come upon this land, and there's nothing, I don't think there's any way to steer clear of it at this point, because like I say, it's already started. It's just going to continue. Sadly, it's going to continue to escalate. You know, sometimes I'm driving along, you know, and I look at all the drones, if you would, you know, driving around doing their day-to-day routine with like no clue, you know, or at least in willful denial of what's going on and what's happening and where things are going. And I can't, you know, it sounds like, wow, I'm looking down on them, but actually no, sometimes I look at those people and I'm like jealous, you know. I'm like, you know, wow, they go through their lives and they're just blind to all of these problems and all of this this conflict that is increasing. But being in denial won't protect them from it. That's the thing. The conflict will come upon them. It will touch them at some point, and they'll be taken aback. They'll be all shocked and surprised when it does finally reach them, when it finally reaches their doorstep, when they are finally attacked in the same way that we're attacked now. We're just kind of at the forefront of it. But it'll get around to them, and it slowly is, and it is. It's starting to get some of them already. But as they go through their lives, just refusing to see what's going on, like I say, whether that's accidental, intentional, whatever, it doesn't really matter. Again, the fact of the matter is the conflict doesn't care. The conflict is coming regardless, and they're going to get caught up, and they're going to get swept up in it. And the difference is they're going to be confused and not understand where this is, why, and then where the rest of us, at least we see it coming. We can be kind of mentally prepared as things continue, sadly, to get worse. But yeah, like I say, the trajectory is kind of already set. I mean, I see people say, we need to do this and make it worse. Why? Why? Instead, you're better off just preparing yourself mentally and in whatever ways you can as things continue, like I say, to deteriorate, because that's what they're going to do. And we just, I comfort myself by saying, well, we don't know how any of this plays out, which is true. I mean, we kind of get an idea of where things are headed, but we don't know exactly how all of it plays out. And that brings up another point. You know, it's easy, and I see a lot of people do it, I think, that do get it, that see how things are going downhill and how they're deteriorating, and they're not going to get better because they're continuing to get worse. And those who are supposed to be ruling over us, they continue to do the same things that are making it worse. And I see a lot of people, and they get so focused on this, you know, and it's like they're aware of these things and they're focused on, that's all they focus on. Like I say, I mean, yeah, it's great. Those who are just unaware of it, it's going to catch up to them. It's going to catch them by surprise. And you're not going to be caught by surprise because you've seen this coming. You've been telling people that it's coming. You've been warning people that it's coming. And that's all well and good. But you still have to live your life. You know, and I see so many people in our circles, and it's like they forget that. They're so set on everything's going to hell in a handbasket that they forget to live their lives too. I mean, yes, I who knows how bad it'll be in a year, 10 years. Oh, my gosh. You know, I mean, there could be out and out conflict, like video game tier conflict in the streets. I don't know. Like I say, I don't know how it plays out. But today it's not. I mean, there's nothing wrong with enjoying your life today while you can. I mean, while things are still relatively peaceful, you're not doing anything wrong. If you decide to go ahead and, I mean, just enjoy your life today, do it. I mean, yes, more conflict is coming, but enjoy what you've got today. You know, you don't know. You're not promised tomorrow. You're not even promised the rest of this day. So there's nothing wrong with remembering to also live your life. Enjoy your life. This conflict will continue, and it'll probably be continuing after you're dead and gone on some level or another. I mean, things change, they ebb and flow, and situations change, and there's big turnover, and then there's slow, gradual change. But you only get so many days on this earth. You only get so many days in this world, and then you're going to be dead. And then you're not going to do anything. You're not going to know anything. You're not going to know trouble. You're not going to know problems. You're not going to know happiness. You're not going to know joy. You're not going to get to see anything because you're going to be dead. You're going to be in the ground. I mean, live this life. You've got so many days. God has given you so many days on this earth. And if you just piss those away, if you just piss that away because you're focused on one thing, and some of this stuff is stuff that hasn't even happened yet, you waste those few days you got, and you're not going to get them back. This day, you're sitting here listening to this show, and it'll never be again. This day, you're listening right now, you're never going to have this day back, ever. I mean, tomorrow, who knows what tomorrow will be like, but it won't be today. There'll be something different. There'll be something a little different about. And it's so easy to take those days for granted. And the younger you are, the easier it is to do that. hey, the older you are, the more you realize, once you cross that point to where you know there's more days behind you, you can't deny anymore that there's more days behind you than there are in front of you. Even if you live to be an old man, you know, there's still more days behind you than there are in front of you. Once you reach that point, then you start getting much more keenly aware of how few days you get and how important it is to do what you can with each one. And it's so easy to get caught up in things. We've all been there. I'm not sitting here talking down to you like I'm immune to it, because, you know, you work and you do what you can to provide a living for your family and to keep a roof over your head and to keep food on the table. And the next thing you know, all these days have gone by. And what have you done with them? Well, I mean, you have to do these things. You have to support your family. You have to keep a roof over your head. The bills paid. Believe me, I'm very, very, very keenly aware of that. But yet the days go by and these days go by and you're never going to get them back. And you look ahead of you and those numbers of days, again, this is assuming you're going to live to be an old man. You're not going to die in a car wreck in another 6 months. The number of those days is shrinking. You're shrinking. You know, when it comes to days of your life, you're always in a bear market. That's a way to look at it. You know, it's from the time you're born, you're in a bear market, because the number of days in front of you, if for a 1 week old infant, each day that goes by is fewer days ahead of them. So you're always, when it comes to how many days you get on this earth, you're in a perpetual bear market, because it's always going down. Now, when you're young and you're 20 years old and you pretty much feel like you're invincible and your whole life is ahead of you, you assume this. I've went to school with a lot of people that are long dead now, but they no doubt thought they had their whole lives ahead of them. And some of them never even made it out of college. You know, died in accidents, drug overdoses, other tragic things. But the point is that as you look ahead, the days are always getting fewer. And when you're young, you always think there's a whole bunch. As you look, and yeah, they may be getting fewer, but you assume, you know, you're 20 years old and you've only been on this earth for 20 years. That's your life expectancy. And you think, yeah, I should live to be 80, you know, 80 years old. You assume that, and then assume you're correct. You figure 60 years ahead of you, that's a bunch. You know, that's a bunch of years ahead. I don't need to worry about that. I've got plenty. Especially when 20 years is your entire life experience. I mean, 10 years ago, you were, 10 years old? You know, now, you know, 60 years, that's like an eternity. But then you wake up one day, and you're what? 50 years old. Well, if you live to be 80, that's... what, 30 years? And you're 50? 30 years ago, you were 20. And that wasn't that long ago. It sure doesn't seem that long ago. Fewer days ahead of you, the faster they go by. You know, it just runs by. Then when you realize that, you look and you can see that the hourglass, when the hourglass was full of sand, you're like, oh, that's coming out of there real slow. I'm good. But when you look up and the hourglass is 2/3 empty and there's more sand in the bottom part than in the top part, then you're like, oh shit, the sand's moving faster. It's not moving any faster. It's going out at the same pace it always was. But now you're keenly aware of it, and it looks like, man, that sand's coming out of there fast. What's going on with this thing? It's nailed down the table. You can't pick it up. You can't turn it back over. The sand is coming out of there so fast, because you realize that your time is running out. And again, you would do well to remember that you're looking at that hourglass and you're assuming that a tragedy or an accident isn't going to come along and shatter the glass. You know, you could be in a car accident tomorrow and your life has ended. You thought you still had at least a third of the sand left, but the truth of the matter is the last few grains are running out. I'm not trying to be a downer this weekend. I know personally that it's so easy to get caught up in the trap to lose sight of how precious precious each day is. And again, I see people get so caught up in our degrading society and how things are going downhill, and white people are a minority in the world, and are now our white nations are crumbling, and they're bringing all of these other people in, and our economies are tanking. It's harder and harder to provide for your family, and our politicians are so corrupt, and our system is against us. I mean, it's against the very people who are the descendants of those who built that system. And the system serves foreign interests. And it's so easy to get caught up in this and get so entangled in it and so focused on it that you forget to still live your life. Again, yes, I don't see any way out of the fact that conflict is going to increase. There's going to be more problems. There's going to be more trouble. There's going to be more strife. There's going to be more violence. It's coming. I mean, I'm just telling you, it's coming. Is there more or less than there was 10, 15, 20 years ago? And you just assume the trend is going to continue. But look around your life today. I mean, how are things for you? You're alive. I hope you have your health. I hope you you know, maybe you have children. How are your children doing? Don't forget to live your life. I mean, this is great. It's all good and well, and you're trying to do what's right, and you're trying to make a difference, and you're trying to make your life mean something by putting your efforts towards a larger cause. And that's good. I mean, that's a good thing. Anybody can go through life and be a mindless drone and then die and nobody remembers them. That's all fine and dandy. You're trying to dedicate yourself to a bigger cause. You're trying to do a bigger thing. And that's all well and good. But you still have to live your life. You're still going to have to find some way to find some joy today. Find some joy. I mean, maybe you've had it. I don't care if you've had it. It's harder some days, obviously, than others when things go your way. You know, I mean, it's easier to find the joy in your life. But what's hard is when you have those really bad days, when things don't go your direction. And it just seems like one thing after another, after another, after another happens. And you're just so frustrated. It's difficult to find the joy, but you really need to strive to find some joy and some happiness in your life each day. You need to find something to be joyful about each day. And it doesn't have to be a big thing. When I can sit and enjoy a peaceful morning or even a peaceful evening after dark, go outside and sit down in the dark. Maybe have a, you know, cup of decaf or whatever, and just sit and enjoy the silence and smell the night air. Stop and smell the night air. You know, it's funny because the sense of smell, they say, is the most, the sensory perception that is closest tied to memory. And I believe that's true because you can smell different smells, like taking the night air, and it will bring back, it brings back for me anyway, it brings back memories of times when I was younger, and it reminds me of different places. The different smells will remind me of different places I've been in my life. And you can find some joy there. You can find at least some peace. Find some peace. You got to get in a peaceful place. As a Christian believer, I believe one of the most sinful things we can do is to take this life for granted. You've been handed this great blessing, this great gift, and it doesn't seem like a blessing sometimes when you're in a real troubling time. It can be hard for this life to seem like a blessing. It can seem like nothing but a burden. One burden after the other. But it is a blessing. And to take your days for granted. To take each precious day that God has given you. It's worth more than gold. The man on his deathbed that is filthy, rich, wealthy. And he's on his deathbed. He would give his fortune for just another day on this earth. That's how precious these days are. If you are the man who's a filthy, rich billionaire, he's got $50 billion in his bank account and he is laying on his deathbed. And the doctor says, you know, you ain't going to make it through the night. You know, tells the family, he ain't going to make it through the night. So y'all need to go ahead and say your goodbyes and everything. That man would give his entire fortune for one more day. That's how much these days are worth. So don't take them for granted. Don't take this day for granted. That man would pay $50 billion for one more day, but you've got a day. You've got another day. Yes, you can do bigger things, and it's great. You can try to accomplish serve a larger cause, and that's all well and good. But don't forget to enjoy life at the same time. It's doable, folks. Believe me, you can do it. It's harder some days than it is others, but you can do this. What else going on? Oh, of course, I talk, my social media platforms, Gab, because I've been basically permabanned from every other platform. Well, I've never been on Facebook. I've never been on Facebook. Never will. That's a pointless exercise. Twitter was always fun. I really enjoyed Twitter. And, we talk about, of course, we're all aware of how Twitter is banning us. And make no mistake, I mean, it is. They said, well, we're banning them for hate. We're banning them for promoting hate. But they ban us again. They ban us for ideas. They ban us because we speak the truth. In the days when I was able to somewhat maintain a Twitter presence, I actually managed to have, from time to time, it wasn't very often because most of them are just like drones that are programmed to have a knee-jerk reaction. But there were times that I was able to have like meaningful, somewhat intellectual conversations with leftists. And I really enjoyed that. And I think this is what scares them the most. The few leftists out there that aren't just programmed to have a knee-jerk reaction, that are able to sit down and say, well, what actually do you think about this? And you explain these things to them and they're like, oh, well, that's not so far out there. Now, I disagree with you on this. Why would you think that? This is why I think this. And you were able to have this back and forth. That's what they find dangerous. When you go on there and you trigger these shit lib leftists and Jews and they get all, oy vey, shut him down, report him. That's not really, I don't think, why they, I mean, that's excuse that and that mechanism is put in place, but those people are the gatekeepers. They're the gatekeepers. The leftists that are actually open to having a intelligent discussion and they can sit there and listen to different, and there are some out there. We have this caricature of them just as they have caricatures of us that we believe because we deal with the gatekeepers. When you're dealing with leftists, time and time again, what you're dealing with are the gatekeepers. They're the leftists at the forefront. They're the vanguard. And one of their jobs is to keep people like us from getting past them and getting to the leftists that are actually capable of some rational thought and are actually capable of a meaningful back and forth, a real discussion, even though you can have a meaningful discussion. At the end of it, you don't agree with each other on everything. That's called being human. But the vanguard of leftists, their job is to keep us from them, from the people behind them. They're keeping some of the rank and file leftists that are able to actually engage in rational discussion away from us because they're afraid of truth. They're afraid of our truth reaching these people and these people coming to a realization. I've interacted with people that are on our side now, and they're like, yeah, I used to be a big time shit lib leftist. I used to be a big time leftist. And then I started realizing and I started looking into these things, and that's what scares them. That's why they continually ban us from these platforms. It's not, they use the excuse of we trigger them and I need my safe space and all. But make no mistake, that's the vanguard. That's the gatekeepers. And their job is to keep us away from the rank and file leftists, who are actually, some of them, actually capable. And granted, it was rare. It's tough to break through the vanguard. And so much of leftism, Marxism, cultural Marxism today is a brainwashing program. It really is. It's a mental program that keeps people so emotionally chained to have reactions, just to have reactions without logical thought. And it keeps them in prison. It keeps them imprisoned. But again, there are some people that just like certain aspects of it. Like, I think healthcare should be a right and the people shouldn't have to bankrupt themselves, because they get sick or because they get injured in an accident. But when these people have a view like that, that's their point of leftism, when they're allowed to interact with people like us. And it's like, yeah, I think that too. But this is why we can't have that. This is how the system is set up. And then you're able to have a back and forth. And that is a dangerous thing because we pluck people from their ranks over to our side, the side of truth. When those gatekeepers look amongst their fellow leftists, and they see him massively triggered and oh, going on about this guy or that guy. This makes them happy. They're not upset. When the gatekeepers, if you're a leftist, listen to this. When your gatekeepers see all of you triggered and running around, look at this guy. Oh, my gosh. OMG, I can't even. That makes them happy. They're not upset. They're thrilled. The programming's work. The programming has worked. You're on the plantation. You ain't nowhere near the jail, realizing that you have the key to your own jail cell. But when they look around and they see one of you actually discussing something rationally with one of us without getting emotionally triggered, this concerns them greatly. This concerns them to no end. This is like hit the emergency red alert button, because you're in danger. You're in danger of working past the program. You're in danger of realizing that you're in a jail cell. They told you you're free, but you're actually in a jail cell, and you have the key. You've got the key. You can walk out anytime. You've got the key to your own shackles, and those shackles are lies. They've lied to you. They've told you these things. They told you they want these things. They told you that they're against the big corporations, didn't they? They've told you that, oh, we're against Wall Street and we're for the little people. And it's all a lie. The big corporations, they're supporting your gatekeepers. It's like how conservatives, same thing with conservatives. Conservatives, you know, the Republicans, the so-called conservative leaders have been against abortion since what, 1973? Still around, isn't it? All these things the conservative leaders tell them they're against, we're against this. And yet, what? Nothing. Well, same thing. If you're towards the left side and it's like, we're for universal health care. And, you know, but where's it at? And if you get it, it's going to be some form of it where everybody else pays for it. You can't say, well, yes, and we're for the working man. If you get some form of universal health care, trust me, it's going to be structured in a way where the working man carries what's left of the working man, by the way, in this country, carries that burden. It's not going to be carried by the big corporations. Whenever they say, we're going to make, what was it the other day? I saw something and some Democrat proposed some bill, and by golly, it's going to be paid for by the wealthy corporations. It's not going to pass. They know it's not going to pass when they put it up. That's just breadcrumbs they're throwing to you. If anything gets passed, it'll get passed in a way to where the working man, where the little man, or the guy that has a business with, what, 4 employees or some shit, he's the one's going to pay for it. You can be rest assured that Chase Bank isn't going to be paying for it. You could, J.P. Morgan, Wells Fargo, you can be bet Jamie Dimon is not going to be paying for it. It's going to be paid for by the working man. It's all a lie. They're all working together. They're lying to you. Just as the conservatives and the Republican Party lies to the rank and file conservative people. It's all a sham. They're all on the same team. And it ain't your team. You think it. They tell you they're on your team. They ain't on your team. I tell you, it's just an amazing thing. And this is what they fear. This is what they fear, is that you're going to realize this. And the more you're exposed to truth, the more you do realize it. The more you start looking around and going, wait a minute. These people been telling me they're going to do this for how long? Well, why aren't they doing it? Oh, and it's always the same excuse. Well, because those guys, the guys that are actually on their own team, they just won't let us. They keep blocking us. Yeah. Okay. Whatever. No, because they haven't worked out a way to do what they say they're going to do and foist it on everybody else to pay for it. Because big corporations ain't going to pay for it. I can guarantee you that. The big banks, the 1% or the 1% of the 1% damn sure isn't going to pay for it. They own all the politicians. But yeah, I do. I miss those few times that I was able to engage in a rational discussion with people on the left. There, like I say, there are few and far between. I could probably count them on one hand. But it was nice. It gives you some hope in your fellow humans. Now I'm stuck over here on Gab and Normicon land. And it's much more frustrating. It really is. And I don't know. I say I can recall the number of leftists that were able to have a rational discussion on one hand, but is it any better with these so-called conservatives? I think it may be worse, to be honest. I really do. I even the militant leftists, I mean, at least they're an enemy to your face. The conservative is the guy who says he's on your side and always gets around to stabbing you in the back. That's the way it tends to work. I was on Gab the other day, and I said the group thing over there. I never looked at groups. I've never really looked at it. I love, what is this group thing? So I look at it, and there's one there. The I Stand With Israel group. And I thought, I've got to do this. I don't want to do it, but I'm going to do it. I'm gonna take one for the team and wander through this group. And it was as vomit-inducing as you might imagine. Yeah, all these people essentially bowing down before a foreign nation. Some of them excuse it with their shit tier understanding of the Bible. Some of them do it because my greatest ally ever. So they have all this reading, and you go through here. There was one, somebody put something up. It was some kind of boy hardcore nationalist quote from the leaders of Israel. And they're like, you know, if only our leaders were like that. And it's like, our leaders, you don't understand. It's one and the same. They're one and the same. Our leaders. If only our leaders were like Israel. Well, you're not going to be, because the Israeli leaders are watching out for their people. But they're also your leaders, and you're not their people, so that they don't give two shits about you except what they can get from you. And if they can convince you to send your young sons to go fight in their wars for them, they're concerned about that, but that's about as far as that concern goes. Same thing, you know, we were talking just a minute ago. If you're on the left, well, one of the great things that the rank and file leftists have kind of fallen in support of this boycott and divest Israel movement. You know, there's something that is really illustrative. You look at how your so-called leaders, you know, are just taken aghast by this. They're embarrassed by it. They really want it to go away. When you're attacked for your divest and boycott Israel stuff, your so-called leaders get real quiet on that, don't they? They get real kind of squirmy and uncomfortable about it because they don't want to just flat out toss you under the bus. But at the same time, maybe they don't really give you any support on that, do they? They're really awkward and uncomfortable about it. Figure it out. Figure it out. The so-called leaders of the right, as far as conservatives, and the leaders on the left, they're all on the same team. They're all answering in the end to the same boss. But conservatives are more frustrating to deal with than leftists. They really are. They're more frustrating to deal with because, again, with the leftists, you mostly just deal with this emotional programming and they go off the deep end. And that's at least funny. You know, it's at least funny when they go off the deep end and act triggered and run for their safe spaces and just like rabbit signal, you know, get this guy banned, report him, get him banned. Yeah, it's at least funny. It's at least funny. And again, you do occasionally, on rare occasion, you run into a leftist that's like, well, okay, why do you think this? Why this? Because this is what I think. And you're able to say, oh, okay, hey, I'll turn off the troll here for a minute and we'll have a rational discussion. And that's rewarding. But with conservatives, it's this whole other just dimension. Because on the surface, you know, it's like, I love America. I love, you know, I'm red, white, and blue. And you're like, okay, well, you know, these people love their nation, so they ought to be easier to reach, right? And you're like, okay, yeah, so we should have some common ground here because we love our nation. And, you know, a nation is the people. Oh, no. What do you mean, oh, no? America's an idea. A melting pot. A melting pot. This is one of the most, the melting pot is just like one of the most, by just one of the most absolutely retarded ideas in the world, by the way. It's because it relies on total ignorance. If you've ever melted lead, if you've ever like made your own bullets or something like that, you've melted lead or silver or something like that. You melt lead, like you get some lead out there and you melt it, all this crap floats up to the top. And the reason, one of the reasons you melt it, besides being able to form it into a bullet, is you melt it so you can get the impurities out. Because you melt it and all this like dirt, just impurities. They float to the top, and part of the melting process is smelting. You skim that stuff off the top, so you wind up with pure lead. You wind up with a pure outcome. You don't melt it, and when you melt it, all of the impurities blend together, and now it's all lead because you blended the impurity. You don't sit there and stir it up and try to get the impurities and the other foreign elements. I probably shouldn't say impurities. The foreign elements to mix in, and it'll all become lead. That's nonsensical. You skim it off, and then you pour it into your forms, and you wind up with pure lead, and it's a more pure product. It makes it more stable, and so on and so forth. You get what you want in the end. The melting pot's one of the most retarded things, because it actually makes the opposite point of what those that promote it say it does. Imagine that. Opposite point. Bizarro speak. My melting pot. America's an idea. America's nothing about a people. Now, any nation is about a people. What makes Israel Israel? Because it's populated by the Jewish people. Nothing wrong with that. What makes Japan Japan? Because it's populated by Japanese. Nothing wrong with that. What makes America America? Because it was populated and built primarily by majority white people. Whoa, 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 whoa. There's something big and wrong with that. What makes Britain Britain? Because it's populated by the British. No, 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 no. You can't have that. Why, a Somali that is born here can be just as British as a umpteenth generation white British person. No, it's a lie. It's a foreign element. It's not ever going to be a part of the whole because it is a foreign element. And with conservatives, once you hit that, then you realize they're just as mentally programmed as the leftists that they bemoan and mock and make fun of. It's just beyond frustrating to deal with these people. Because again, on the surface, you think, oh, well, these people somewhat get it. They ought to be easier to reach. Then you hit them with the truth and watch the mental programming is just as thorough, maybe more thorough than that of the rank and file leftist. And again, some of this may be that so many of these so-called conservatives are boomers. You know, and I mean, as you get older, it gets harder for people to acknowledge that something they've believed more or less their whole life is wrong, you know, because they can't go back then and alter their worldview. It gets harder. Now, some people, you know, I mean, like for me, I alter my view on different individual topics as new information that holds up as true comes along. I adjust and alter my view. It doesn't bother me to do that. But for most people, that's not how it is. And the older you get, the more difficult it becomes to do that, to sit there. If you've got somebody that's 65, 70 years old, and you hit them with this truth that runs counter to what they've believed to be true their entire lives, it doesn't matter how much you prove it to them and how much you can demonstrate that what you're saying is true, they just don't want to admit it because what does it mean? It means they basically, on this topic, they pissed away their whole life believing in a lie. And so that may be part of it. That may be part of what deals with it. But conservatism, thankfully, is dying. More and more people realize it's a scam. And as the boomers die off, you know, that's going to continue to go away. So thank goodness conservatism is dying off and it'll be replaced by a more realistic nationalism. And, I don't know. Again, you get into, how do we have time for that? And how it's just going to play out as it plays out. And we can do what we can do and we can reach who we can reach. In the end, really, we're stuck with wherever we can. We try to speak the truth and we try to point out these truths and the rest's in God's hands. I mean, you can do what you can do and that's it. You can't get frustrated. You can't get down. It's not enough. Well, you have to hope that the efforts of other people combined with your efforts will be enough. We got to get into this week's sermon. He's getting here visiting and we're going to get late for church. So let's get on in here. Those of you who don't like to stick around for the actual centerpiece of the show, you know, hey, I'm glad you stopped by for the visit. You're always welcome. You're always welcome to stick around for the sermon this week. We're going to do something a little different with that. And it might actually be something that even non-believers might get something out. I don't know. Do what the hell you want. Rest of you, get in here. That's right. Fill those pews. It's time for this week's sermon in the Church of the Lampshade. I'm putting on my crazy old West Reverend frock coat. blasted off here. Work my way up to the pulpit. Y'all get in here, get comfortable, sit down, and let's get to this week's sermon. As I said, we're going to do something. I was going through trying, like, what are we going to talk about this week? What are we going to talk about this week in the Church of the Lampshade for our sermon? And it's not always as easy as you may think it is. Sometimes it's easy, sometimes it's more difficult. And I thought we'd kind of do something different this week. We're going to start something different. We're going to kind of take on a long-term thing here, and not super long-term, but I'm thinking that we're going to start delving into the meaning of life. And there's no greater book that does that in the Bible than the book of Ecclesiastes, I think. As far as I don't mean like salvation, like eternal life, but I mean like your life here on earth, your day-to-day life, the things you observe in this life. And there's nothing that does it as good as the book of Ecclesiastes. And thankfully, it's not like a super long book. And it's one of my favorite books. In fact, in the Old Testament, it is my favorite book. That and Psalms, because Psalms, the great thing about Psalms is, like, if you're wanting to pray, especially if you're in like hard times, you're in your troubled times, and you're trying to pray and you can't, it doesn't seem to work. Your mind goes over. You can open up the book of Psalms and pray one of the Psalms. It's like the book of Psalms is like, it's like pre-formatted prayers for you. For those times when you can't seem to pray in the spirit, you open the book of Psalms, you can find a psalm that touches your heart, like where you're at right now, and you can just pray that. It's like a template of prayer. And so Psalms is cool. But one of my old favorite books of the Bible, and definitely favorite books of the Old Testament, is Ecclesiastes. And I thought what we'd start doing here is we're just going to go through the entire book. And obviously, we're not going to do that today on this show. But I thought we'd start working our way through it in each episode, because there's a wealth of stuff there, and there was a wealth of information. I think it'll be a blessing for you. I think it'll be a blessing for me. And so we're going to try this. And if we get rocking along with it, and, you know, say next week there's something else we want to talk about spiritually, we'll do that too. But I want to continue to work for, so it may not be like every week, okay, we're back where we left off at Ecclesiastes, but yes, eventually that's what we're going to do. We may skip a week and talk about something, you know, preach about something else, but we're eventually going to work our way entirely through the book of Ecclesiastes. And again, I think it'll be a blessing for you. I hope it'll be a blessing for you. So let's go ahead. We're going to start that this week. As we begin our journey through the book of Ecclesiastes, I'm going to do something a little different with this. And again, I remind you that again next week, I don't know if we'll pick up from here. We may have some other spiritual message, but the week after, if we don't do it next week, we'll pick up. So I'll remind you where we're going. We may do this every week until we're finished, but we are going to work our way through this because, again, it's one of my favorite books. And as we go through the book of Ecclesiastes, we're also going to do something else different. I mean, you know, regular Church of the Lampshade listeners, I usually use the King James Version. It's just, I like the feel of it. And I think a lot of people, it feels more legitimate and such. And there are certain things that I think are a little better worded or whatnot in the King James Version. That's what we usually use. But as we go through Ecclesiastes, I'm going to use the New International Version for the simple fact that I've read the book of Ecclesiastes multiple times, both versions, the King James and New International Version, and I feel like the new in this instance, the NIV version, it reflects well enough that we can use it. And because we're going to be kind of covering a lot of territory, it's going to be easier to rock on with regular English versus Old English, where we're sitting there working through our these and thous. And so I think we'll do it this way. I think, because again, this will enable us to cover a little more ground. And I've read both versions, and I'm not like, well, this one, it doesn't get. I believe we're good enough that we can do that and get to the heart of the topics that we want to do. So if you're offended by that, I mean, don't be. I don't use anything but the King James Version. That's fine, because you can go along with the King James Version, and again, the meaning of and such is there. And, you know, so you're welcome to go along with the King James Version. Again, I just think, because we're covering an entire book of the Bible, be it not a long book, but I think this will make it easier for us to kind of flow along if we're not having to sit here and remind people, well, this old English term means this. And so this will allow us to rock along. So let's just go ahead and get started. I mean, we'll start with chapter 1 here. The words of the teacher, son of David, king in Jerusalem. Because remember, the book of Ecclesiastes is like the meaning of life. I always call it the meaning of life book. As far as this life. And so we're, yeah, the words of the teacher, son of David, king in Jerusalem. Meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. Utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. So we start right off. You want to know the meaning of life? There is none. It's meaningless. It's meaningless. We're going to start off with the black pills right off the bat. Wow. What does man gain from all his labor at which he toils under the sun? Generations come, generations go, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises, the sun sets, and hurries back to where it rises. The wind blows to the south and turns to the north. Round and round it goes, ever returning on its course. No matter what you do in this life, it doesn't really affect the earth. The sun comes up, sun goes down. It just goes on. You do all of this stuff. You get concerned with all of these things. You get concerned. Well, I've got, I've got this bill to pay. I don't know if I got it. And you get all concerned with this stuff. And in the big scheme of things, it doesn't amount to anything. It's meaningless. Most of the stuff we get concerned about in this life, we get so bogged down with in this life. It's all bullshit. The earth isn't going to stop because you've got a crisis in your life. We get so focused on it, seems like a big deal to us because it is a big deal at the time. Think back on your own life. 10 years ago, do you know what was a big issue for you that you were so concerned? 10 years ago today, there was an issue in your life and you were so concerned about it and you just, man, you were losing sleep. You were laying awake at night and you were just like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do about this? What am I going to do? Do you remember what that issue is now? No, you don't. You've already forgotten it. At the time, it's such a big deal. You lost sleep over it. Maybe you even couldn't eat. You were so concerned. What am I going to do? It's this huge crisis. And 10 years later, you don't even remember because in the big scheme of things, it's bullshit. They're all little things. It's just all little things. It's not going to change the big scheme of things. These things that we get bogged down about and worry about in life. All streams flow into the sea, yet the sea is never full. To the place the streams come from, there they return again. All things are wearisome, more than one can say. The eye never has enough of seeing, nor the ear its fill of hearing. What has been will be again. What has been done will be done again. There's nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which one can say, look, this is something new. It was there already, long ago. It was here before our time. There is no remembrance of men of old, and even those who are yet to come will not be remembered by those who follow. One of the things I do is it's just one of those things that I think about, and I don't know, I guess I'm just kind of conscious of life in this way. But I think about it. You'll be like in a restaurant or a cafe or wherever you may be, someplace. And, you know, they'll have those old pictures up, you know, like here's this picture and it was taken in 1930 something of this college team or of these people just walking down the street. Or here's some people that were at a music concert in 1948 or whatever. And you look at it and you'll look at these pictures and I look at the faces of the people there. And most of them, if not all of them, are dead now. They're dead now. Who knows them? Have you ever taken the time? And if you haven't, just do it. Really, it's interesting, especially if you can go to an old one. Find an old cemetery. Have you ever gone to an old cemetery on a pretty day and nobody's around and just walked up and down and looked at the gravestones? It's Grandpa Lampshade, what are you talking about? This sounds morbid. No, really, because it gives you, I suggest you do that because it will give you perspective. The older the graveyard, the better. All these people, you're walking where all of these people are buried. There's nothing under there now, but maybe a few bone fragments. Maybe not even that, if the graves are old enough. There's nothing left there. But yet at one time, those people walked this earth. They had dreams. They had stuff they laid awake at night and worried about because it was such a big deal. It ain't a big deal to them now, is it? They're dirt. They're long dead. It will give you perspective. You walk through an old graveyard and it just, it's amazing. Like you look at these gravestones that you can still read that are like from the 1800s. And it's amazing how many children died. You know, how many people lost children. Just it's just breathtaking. We take so much for granted now, and yet you look and there all these child graves. But yeah, the point remains, who was this guy? You look, walk by and you look at a gravestone. This guy lived to be 56 years old. Now he's dead. He died in 1948. At 58 years old. Beloved father and husband. Who is he? You don't know. Most people don't know. The further back it was that he died, more of his family doesn't even know. Take somebody along. Hey, this was your great Uncle Jim. Yeah, I never met great Uncle Jim. But there he is. He's in the ground. Nobody knows who he is. Not even his own family. Once you move out three generations, nobody's going to know who you are. Yes, your kids know who you are. Yes, hopefully your grandkids will know who you are. But you're probably not going to know your great-grandkids. Your grandkids may tell your great-grandchildren, let me tell you about your grandpa, Bill. Oh, one time he took me fishing, blah, blah, and it doesn't mean anything to them because their children, their grandkids are like, okay, that was like ages ago. You won't be remembered, ultimately. That's one of the things that I think makes passing on your genetic lineage so important to us, because we're not going to be remembered. You're not. I mean, your kids will remember you, yes. And again, if your grandkids, you're able to have a relationship with your grandkids, they will remember you, but it stops there. After your grandkids, that's it. They're not going to know you. They're not going to know. Those who come after that are not going to know you. But yet, as you pass on your genetic lineage, you know, it's like that part, they do know you. I mean, they don't realize it's you. They may, you know, but there'll be certain characteristics, certain traits that you had, that you got from someone way back there, that was a part of making you who you are. And those, your great-great-grandchildren, there will be some of them that have those same traits. And they are literally the same traits, because it's literally the same DNA sequence that you carry. In this way, it's like you live on. But they don't know. If you asked them, well, who was your great-great-grandpa Bill? Then I have no idea. Well, there's his grave. Oh, okay. You know, nice headstone, I guess. But I don't know anything about you. But they do. And that they carried the same exact DNA sequence on this one trait that you carried. So in that instance, they do know you. They do know you when they look in the mirror, or when they observe certain aspects of their own lives and how they live, or the way they think. That is exactly the way you were, or you are, because they carry that DNA. But they're not going to remember you. Let's continue on here. I, the teacher, was king over Israel and Jerusalem. I devoted myself to study and to explore by wisdom all that is done under heaven. What a heavy burden God has laid on men. I have seen all the things that are done under the sun. All of them are meaningless. A chasing after the wind. What is twisted cannot be straightened. What is lacking cannot be counted. I thought to myself, look, I have grown and increased in wisdom more than anyone who has ruled over Jerusalem before me. I have experienced much of wisdom and knowledge. Then I applied myself to the understanding of wisdom. I got the wisdom. I'm trying to understand wisdom. And all of madness and folly. But I learned that this too is a chasing after the wind. For with much wisdom comes much sorrow. The more knowledge, the more grief. That ought to really ring true for those of you who are politically active on the right. Let's read that again. For much wisdom comes much sorrow. The more knowledge, the more grief. As you deal with people and you try to tell them, hey, this is what's happening to your nations, and this is why it's happening, this is who's doing it, and they're like, I want to hear it. America, my greatest ally. Blah. Much grief when you see what is going on and you try to tell people, as I said before, hey, dude, your house is on fire, and they point and scream at you, arsonist. It brings you much grief. You go through this life and you try to speak the truth and you try to tell people what is going on, because you get it. You realize what's going on. You see these things are going on. You try to speak to these realities. And what do you get? Get attacked. You get deplatformed, you get demonetized, you are just the object of scorn in your community, you're a troublemaker. With much wisdom comes much sorrow. With much knowledge comes much grief. This is true. I mean, you should get that. This is amazing truth, isn't it? Nothing new under the sun. How long ago was the book of Ecclesiastes written? You're starting to get it now. Nothing new under the sun. You say that people hear that. Nothing new under the sun. Well, they didn't have jet airplanes back then. It's not what they're talking about. They're not talking about those meaningless things. Nothing new under the sun. The more you know, the more you get it, the more grief it brings to you. Because the others don't get it. And then when you feel compelled to share this wisdom and this knowledge with other people, your level of grief increases. Let's go ahead. I think we've got time. We'll go ahead and cover chapter 2. So we're going to wind up covering chapters 1 and 2 of Ecclesiastes this week. And we'll go ahead and continue here. I thought in my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure to find out what is good. One of the things I love is because the author, the teacher in the book, he's saying, you know, hey, I'm living my life. I'm going to try all these different things to try to figure out what it all means. Yeah, I observe these things. I'm going to apply these things to myself. I'm going to find out what all of these things mean. So I thought in my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure to find out what is good. He's going to test himself. But that also proved to be meaningless. Laughter, I said, is foolish. And what does pleasure accomplish? I tried cheering myself with wine and embracing folly. Hell, I'll be a fool like everybody else. My mind still guided me with wisdom. I wanted to see what was worthwhile for men to do under heaven during the few days of their lives. Look around, you see people that live their life this way. This is how they apply their life, is whatever pleasures they can gain today, and they have what? It's meaningless. These people have these empty lives. Yeah, they chase all of these different pleasures. It's all they're about. They don't care about anything meaningful. They don't care about doing anything that's larger than themselves. They're just what feels good right now. Now, you look at people, the most self-centered, the most selfish people in the world are those who all they care about is what brings them pleasure right now at this moment. There is no longer term thinking for them, and their lives are a wreck. It's meaningless. In the end, the pleasures themselves don't really even bring them any sort of joy. Let's continue on. I undertook great projects. I built houses for myself and planted vineyards. I made gardens and parks and planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made reservoirs to water groves of flourishing trees. I brought male and female slaves. I bought male and female slaves and had other slaves who were born in my house. I also owned more herds and flocks than anyone in Jerusalem before me. I amassed silver and gold for myself and the treasure of kings and provinces. I acquired men and women singers and a harem as well. The delights of the heart of man, I became greater by far than anyone in Jerusalem before me. In all this, my wisdom stayed with me. I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. My heart took delight in all my work, and this was the reward of all my labor. Yet, when I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless, a chasing after the wind. Nothing was gained under the sun. So he went out and said, I'm going to try. Okay, I'm nothing, anything I want, because he's got the wealth. He's built up this great wealth. He's got silver. He's got gold. If you had a bank account, he's got all the money in the world. So he's building parks. He's building vineyards. He's got a harem. You know, he's got a harem. He's got all these women. All these women he could want, all these beautiful women in his harem, all of these things. And when it's all done, he's like, okay, what does it mean? What actual meaning is in all of it? Nothing. Then I turned my thoughts to consider wisdom and also madness and folly. What more can the king's successor do than what has already been done? I saw that wisdom is better than folly, just as light is better than darkness. The wise man has eyes in his head, while the fool walks in the darkness. But I came to realize that the same fate overtakes them both. Then I thought in my heart, the fate of the fool will overtake me also. What then do I gain by being wise? I said in my heart, this too is meaningless, for the wise man, like the fool, will not long be remembered. In days to come, both will be forgotten. Like the fool, the wise man too must die. So he's saying it's better to be wise. I mean, yeah, anybody would agree with that, right? Better to be wise than to be a fool. It's better to be righteous than to be wicked. But in the end, you're all going to die. It's just like we talked about earlier. I mean, the billionaire on his deathbed would give every cent for one more day, because that's it. Once it's over, it's over. The same fate awaits us all. There are those, and it tends to be, I think, for those with the most wealth and power, that is so difficult for them to accept this. They can't accept it, that their fate awaits them. You see people that, you know, they're old and yet they just continue to cling to money and to power. And it just, they want more and they're more. And you're looking at them and it's like, these people ain't going to be alive probably in another 5 years. It doesn't matter. They cling to the wealth and the power. And they just know, you know, because they can't accept the fact, the reality, that the same fate waits them as the homeless guy down on the sidewalk. And when you're dead, you're dead. It doesn't matter. You lose all your status. If you're a former president of the United States, yeah, they're going to have a big parade. They're going to walk your casket down Main Street. And they're going to fly the flags at half staff. And you know what? Ain't none of that going to mean nothing to you because you're dead. Ain't going to mean anything more to you than the homeless guy that dies without anybody knowing it under a bridge somewhere. Same fate. Same fate. You're dead. Doesn't matter to you. Let's go ahead and wrap this up. So I hated life because the work that is done under the sun is grievous to me. All of it is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. I hated all the things I had toiled for under the sun because I must leave them to the one who comes after me. And who knows whether he'll be a wise man or a fool? Yet he'll have control over all of the work into which I have poured my effort and skill under the sun. You build all this stuff and somebody else is going to get to enjoy it. This too is meaningless. So my heart began to despair over all my toilsome labor under the sun. For a man may do his work with wisdom, knowledge, and skill. Then he must leave it all he owns to someone who has not worked for it. This too is meaningless. And a great misfortune. What does a man get for all of the toil and anxious striving with which he labors under the sun? All his days, his work is pain and grief. Even at night, his mind does not rest. This too is meaningless. A man can do nothing better than to eat and drink and find satisfaction in his work. This too, I see, is from the hand of God, for without him, who can eat or find enjoyment? To the man who pleases him, God gives wisdom, knowledge, and happiness. But to the sinner, he gives the task of gathering and storing up wealth to hand it over to the one who pleases God. This too is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. So he's saying here kind of what we were talking about even in our visit before we got into the sermon at all, which is kind of a nice way to bring things back around. You're going to have to enjoy life. You have to find a way to enjoy life. I often think about the early church and how we are told that, you know, at one point they all got thrown in prison. And I mean, prison then was like a dungeon. She's like, you know, rat. I mean, you might not even get something to eat. And they all sung songs of praise. And I've always been amazed at that idea that they were able to find a place of joy, even in those horrible, dark circumstances. That's a gift from God. A man can do nothing better than to eat and drink and find satisfaction in his work. Because after you're done with it, somebody else is going to enjoy it. All this stuff is great if you can find satisfaction in the labor of your hands. It's great if you can find satisfaction in your day-to-day life. But because otherwise, if the work itself, if the things you're building yourself is, that's it, that's your goal, in the end, it'll all be meaningless because you're going to die and somebody else who didn't work for it's going to get all that stuff. They didn't have to put any effort into it. You did all of this toilsome labor there. Now it's done. Then you die and some other guy comes along and gets it. He didn't have to build it. He didn't worry. He didn't lay awake at night worrying about it. And yet he gets the fruits of your labor. And being able to enjoy what you can in the circumstances that you're at right now in this life, as we're told right here in the scripture we just read, it is a gift from God. We take it for granted. If you're able to do that, it's real easy to take that for granted, by the way. But, you know, and as poor people, as working class people, we always think about what we could do if we had money. And if I had money, but look at like these Hollywood celebrities who have sold their soul and they've got all this money and they've got celebrity status. You know, people make a fuss over them. Boy, cameras are flashing and they're told constantly what wonderful people they are. And they're so important and they can't enjoy. They've got all this wealth and they can't enjoy it. They're miserable. You hear about them having to go to their 15th trip to rehab because their life is just so miserable. They've got to have a $500, $1,000, $5,000, whatever a day cocaine habit. Their life is so miserable. And we look at this, we shake our heads, but you have to understand the ability to enjoy your life where you're at, whether you have much or whether you have little, is a gift from God. While those people may have much, God has not given them the ability to enjoy it. Be grateful, be thankful. If God has given you the ability to enjoy what you have, where you have right now. We're going to continue on probably next week, unless, like I say, if there's something else we want to talk about, preach about, sermon about, whatever, we'll do that. But we're going to, one way or the other, we're going to continue on all the way through the book of Ecclesiastes. And like I say, this is not going to be a super long-term project because it's not a super long book, but it's something I've always found meaningful, and I thought it'd be a great kind of our first time doing a long-term project in our sermon segment here in the Church of the Lampshade Show. So with that, we're going to wrap up this week, folks, and I hope you enjoyed it. I've enjoyed the visit, as I always have. Again, thank you to those who continue to support what I'm trying to do. I had the same familiar names, the same familiar folks, and I appreciate it. And if you want to be a part of it, again, all the information's at the bottom of the description here, and it is very much appreciated. And like I say, if you want to drop me an email, just say hi. If you got something you want to ask me about, if it's something I really think everybody will get something out of, we might do it on the show. As I said before, I haven't officially brought back questions and comments, but you're always welcome to send your questions and comments. I'll be happy to answer them, even if it's just an email. And if it's something that I think, hey, we should have a larger discussion on it, we'll use it on the show. So don't hesitate. If nothing else, even if you just want to drop a note and say, hey, Gramps, you know, love show, whatever, love to hear from you. It's we kind of do so much of our, I don't know, networking, fellowshipping, whatever, online. I'm hoping moving forward we can do more of this networking in real life. That's the down the road project is right now. I'm just paddling away trying to tread water. So again, thank you for joining us for this week's show. You know, we'll be back next week right here on Radio Arian for the Church of the Lampshade. Healing the world, man tersu up so tall, na ki su iso. Oh,
you.